This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 340 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Welcome to the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Well, before last week, it had been a hot minute. In a minute, I'm going to need a something, a cinnamon roll.
In a minute, I'm going to need a sentimental man or woman to listen to our podcast.
I swear, since the time that became hot in the period of time, it went everywhere in the period of time. Was it hot before we left?
I feel like it started before we left, but it got real popular once we were gone. And then it was almost dead by the time we came home.
Because we watched TikTok, I'm sure, well, not together, but I know Summer did, because we watched TikTok separately all throughout the trip during downtimes or at the hotel, whatever.
Y'all, I had way more downtime than I intended. I had entirely way more downtime than I intended.
She got the extra, what was it called?
I decided to extend my trip.
And she got back about a week later than me. So, but all is good now. She is healthy. We are healthy and we're back. And some of you, a number of people have written, mostly I think emailed. I got through all your stuff. Like, I found you earlier this year. I've gotten through all your read-alongs and the watch-alongs, whatever.
Where have you gone?
You left me at chapter one.
I know. That's the worst. Well,
and I hope we said in that episode that, look, it is, we totally acknowledge it's an awkward place to end, but we didn't want to not start the read-along.
I mean, it was an awkward place to end, but it was kind of also an awkward place to start. I mean, it's like, when you think about it, there's no winning there. You either start it or, yeah, because we could have just skipped that whole week. But
well, we had a sponsor, so... We couldn't have.
Yes, we did. Never mind. We could not have skipped that whole week.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Lisa S.
Thank you, Lisa. And now, moving on to our read-along. I know that the last time, I believe I stated that we were only going to be doing chapter two. But after having listened to chapter two and seeing how short chapter three was, we decided to move forward and do two and three. We're continuing our An Echo in the Bone read-along with chapter two, entitled And Sometimes They Aren't.
Lallybroch, Invernessshire, Scotland, September 1980. Now, I am not going to spoil anything. I mean, Summer and others may consider what I'm about to say a spoiler, but I do not, because I'm not giving any details at all. I'm just stating one.
Are you going to talk about everything you uncovered?
What?
At Culross. Remember that moment in Culross? When you had that whole...
I can mention it.
Oh, we know
it,
why they're going.
No, we don't know. Well, see, that's... Okay. I think if we mention that on the show to people who haven't read, that could be... Well, I mean, now it's not a spoiler. If you're reading along with us, we can talk about it now, I guess. Anyway, I wasn't going to. We can. But what I was going to say was, I'm not going to give any details or storyline or character names or anything. However... Look at the date that Diana gives us in this chapter. Scotland, September 1980. Let me tell you, all the shenanigans. No, we don't even have to look at book seven. All the shenanigans or storylines. Shenanigans is a little bit judgy because it might give someone an idea that there's some bad or not bad things happening. And I don't want to do that. So this is September 1980 that we're first in, quote unquote, real time with the Mackenzies again, right? So the where, okay, fair enough. But the when is so interesting because September 1980, if you have read, then this is no news. If you haven't read, this is where I don't think it's a spoiler, but in book eight, I'm not sure exactly where it opens or like the exact time it opens. I think it opens in October. My point is this entire book and all of book eight, at least anything we get anything that happens in the 20th century, put it that way, any part of the timeline that is mentioned or discussed or whatever that happens in the 20th century happens between September 1980 and December 1980.
Okay, look, here's what I'm going to say to you. I've only read the books post book four once each. So they are not as like easy recall as book one through four are for me. So when you say that, it makes me start going, oh God, there's like three books in 2 months. So I didn't.
No, two books.
Two books and you get what I'm saying.
Book seven and eight. Yeah.
You just encapsulated it in a time frame that I, to this point, had not done.
But only in the 20th century. In the 18th century, it is more than 4 months between books seven and eight. Put it that way. It's like 3 years or so. Anywhoozle, I just wanted to say that because it's I think it's fascinating.
Oh, you've ruined my head. If it's... How? Okay, so
time
if it's...
Time travel.
Like, I know it's time travel, but what I'm saying is that if time moves in a linear fashion, in a parallel linear fashion, which is how they imply that it does, with the offsetting of whatever, we're getting into a TT talk and this always breaks my brain. And you caused this, Ginger. You need to take all of the blame for what I'm about to say. So if that happens, how do we have so much of the past before they reunite together with them having a shorter time in the future?
Well, you just
spoiled
for others.
Which is what you just implied, correct? Did you just say spoiler?
I said you just spoiled for people.
Did I? Because you did it first.
No, all I said was that any storyline we get, I didn't say who it was or who it wasn't. Any story that Diana tells in the from here to book eight, in the that takes place in the 20th century. The mm-hmm. dates we get are September 1980 through December 1980.
Right. But what I'm saying is that by you even just saying that to me, you spoiled it for me. And I've read the books.
Well, then I can't spoil for you.
But you did, though, because I didn't put that together. I just assumed everything was still running parallel and linear. Clearly not.
I will tell you this because it's not running parallel. I mean, in theory, maybe, but already because... The letter that they read the letter that they read in this chapter was not written exactly 200 years before or even 242 years before. But if you look, but you're forgetting one very important point. If you look at the age of Mandy when they had to go back and now 1980 and the year it would have been when they went forward, it's the same amount of time. It's 3 years. It's 3 years is 3 years.
Why are you messing with me?
Because Diana doesn't give us like more than two of those years. She only gives us from September 1980.
I just read these chapters and I was unprepared for this conversation. Ginger, I'm going to ask you to please move on.
So anyway, that all comes from September 1980. That's what it's fascinating. Okay. So then what Summer mentioned when we first started was our chat at Kudus. Basically, one of the places we go on our tour, and we'd love to invite you to join our interest list if you'd like to go in 2024, Pod Abroad. You can send us an email to hello@outlanderpod.com or tweet at us, send us a DM, or if you're on our text message line, send us a text and ask to be added to the interest list. So if you'd like to join our interest list, let us know and we will add you to that. We hope to have information / an updated itinerary for 2024, et cetera, and all information about the price, et cetera, by the end of the summer. I know it sounds like a little bit far off, but things are balls to the wall over there for both our guide, who is going to help us with the updated itinerary, and our operator, who is... also very busy. So
she books all the things.
We will have more information to share by the end of the summer. But speaking of tour or places on tour, one of the places we have been, we've gone all three times so far, is Kudus. It's where they where they farmed. Where they filmed Kreinsmuir, right? Mm-hmm. No, that's Falkirk. No. I get so many things mixed up. It's where they filmed Kreinsmuir.
No, you were right, because that's where Gaelis lives. It has her gardens.
Okay, so we went to Kudus again. And as I was waiting, they did the guests were going on the tour of Kudus.
Kudus.
No, Kudus Palace?
Yes.
Okay, they were going on their tour through there with guides and everything. And I just sat I sat in kind of the, well, it's outside, kind of in the courtyard. There was a dog there. There was a, one of the docents was there, or I guess two of them. Anyway, I was just waiting for the guests to finish. And one of the docents came out, and she was, I don't know if it was the our guide or me, probably our guide or maybe both of us had mentioned it. Like they knew our group was out, were Outlander fans. Like that's pretty obvious. And I don't know if I mentioned our show or what, but she mentioned, or maybe we were talking about the tour and said, oh, well, that's, you know, so glad we could come in here because, you know, we were not able to get into Mid-Hope because they had shut it down for pretty much the entire month for filming, even though they were only filming like one day. They didn't want people to see this, the setup or strike down, right? And so I was saying how that led us, or that led me to think that because, like, who cares if we see setup or strike down? They definitely don't want us or anyone to see the filming. That's fair. But to me, the only thing that made sense, because to anyone that we had spoken to, including our guide, to people's, everyone's knowledge who had, you know, has been around, who's from Scotland and has been around whenever they've been filming the last, you know, 9-10 years, nothing has been shut down to that degree, like weeks before and weeks after, all surrounding like a very brief filming period. So that made me start thinking, like, why would they do that? The only thing that makes sense is that they're, we already know they're hyper secretive, as protective, right? In general. But the only thing that makes sense that they go to that new level is if Lallybroth is going to be different in some way and they don't want people to see it. Because otherwise, Lallybroth is Lallybroth. They bring on, you know, like greenery and animals and, you know, they do what they need to do. But if Lallybroth looks different, for example, in the 1980s, 20th century, yeah, they're not going to want to give that away. There might be a Morris Minor. I don't know. Some characters, it's not just the place, right? It's also, well, that's not true. I was going to say, it's the characters. Well, yeah, but the characters come and go in one day or however long they're filming. They don't need to lock down a site for a month because a character has a different hairstyle. No, but the road
would be totally different. So there might be asphalt now. There might be clearly less straw and hay, and it might look way more industrial than it did.
So that's the only thing that made sense to me. And of course, as always, your / our mileage may vary. We could be wrong. I could be wrong on all of that. But since this chapter opens in Lallybroth at the top of 7, we were there talking about our show and talking about different about Mid-Hope, the whole thing about, you know, the only thing that makes sense, again, we'll find out when we find out. We may never know. I could be completely wrong. But the only thing that made sense of evidence we know, or at least information we know, which is from the books, is that book 7 opens, or at least chapter 2 opens, early on with the Mackenzies at Lallybroch, and it's the 1980s. So that to me, I'm like, oh God, like, you know, they may not even like touch the sides of the house or, you know, the actual Mid-Hope Castle, because obviously it's a historical place. But all the roundabout places, like Summer said, it could be probably is completely different. This one of the docents was sitting there chatting with us about Outlander and everything, and she goes, well, you know, Stars was here. It was like, what, six at that point? This is probably now, what, 3 weeks since we were there? Not quite a month. We mentioned that, and this docent comes out, and so May 25th, so 6 to 8 weeks prior to May 25th, she goes, you know, Stars was out here. They were basically looking around. They were doing the equivalent of a recce. And they were out here looking around Kudus. And they wouldn't tell anyone why they were there, including her. She was saying, yeah, we have no idea why they were here. Well, not that they would give them the, you know, like the detail. But so for someone who hasn't, and again, there is no shame to this, because let's be honest, 99.9999% of the people of the world do not make a podcast about things they're not quite or almost obsessed with, right? So as I mentioned that whole thing about Mid-Hope and Lallybroch, and she's like, oh, well, they were here about 6 or 8 weeks ago and they didn't tell anybody why. That got me thinking. And I was like, So then I started thinking, thinking out loud, why would they come here? I mean, they have every right to do whatever they want. That's not a problem. But why would they come here? Or what might be a reason, if they were smart, they could have come and not announced who they were. But if they had vans, or maybe she recognized the person from, you know, I don't know, 8 years ago or 10 years ago, whatever it was. So They could have been incognito, but they, and maybe they were kind of, but this, at least this docent knew of them, or maybe she heard from her boss. I have no idea, but she knew, or she said that they were there 6 to 8 weeks before and they wouldn't tell anyone, or at least she didn't know why they were, mum's the word is what they were. And so that got me thinking. I was like, oh, okay. Why would stars come out to Kudus? They've been there before. They know what, like, they don't need to direct to recce there, right? If they're going to use it again for a different place, maybe, and like, oh, I wonder where they, you know, might, they might choose to use it for a different purpose, for filming a different scene. Absolutely. And then it hit me. And I, this is hard to do. Oh, okay. I cannot, I will not give it away. But let's look at it this right, at this way. Right, let's look at this. They're filming season 7 right now, right? We have yet to learn. We have yet to learn. There's no evidence that what I'm going to say is going to happen, except it's the only thing that makes sense. I am not guaranteeing we're going to get further seasons. All I am saying is, if Starz is looking around, they typically have done most of their recces for the places that they're going to film for the season that they're filming already, like a year before, 8 months before, not in the middle of filming. Now, it doesn't mean they can't do it. Doesn't mean they can't and never will. But typically, they're looking, you know, 8 to 12 months ahead, because they want to, you know what I mean? They need, there's so much prep, and, you know, it's not just, oh, I have to make the, we have to prepare the things that we need to bring in. Like, whether it's like Summer said, like mud or asphalt, whatever. It's not just the stuff they have to bring in. They have to, especially if it's Kudus and they're doing something there again, they have to talk to the government or the council.
You're right. But if they were going back to Kudus, the thing they painted yellow before that is no longer painted yellow, they might have to repaint it yellow.
Well, yeah, but my point is, if, well, yes, correct. Yes, if there's anything they want to do there again that is similar to what they did before, they're going to have to do it and coming back. So, but I don't see why they would necessarily need to come back in person. Now, that doesn't, so the caveat there is, there might be something that I don't have a guess about. There's tons.
You're right. They're looking for new locations for the reasons that you and I both already know about, because we talked about it out loud when we were in Culver's, for the reasons that you're thinking they were scouting for. They could absolutely need an outdoor shot that includes the area of where they'd previously painted it yellow and then they painted it back white. They may have to paint that again, because if the place that they end up, I don't know, renting or paying to film these additional scenes at might be in the view of the places that they have to repaint. I mean, because if there is a place that would work there, then they may need to have to repaint it. If it doesn't ever show that, then that's a good thing to know. They don't have to repaint it because the new place they have doesn't even show it.
They could be there wanting to film it for a very similar, or anyway, I can't say too much more without, I don't want to ruin what I'm about to say. As I said, we have no information more than anyone else about whether or not we will have further seasons. That's one statement. And the other statement is, typically, as I understand, when we've heard about recces before, they're not, they don't typically happen for, they don't always happen for current seasons. So if we look at those two pieces of information, we have no yes and no about season 8, right? It's up in the air. We have no information about season 8 either way. And we have some potentially suggestive information, or information that suggests they were doing a recce for whatever season. But, and we have information like, okay, it's more likely than not for a different season. Again, I could be wrong. So, thought all of this through. And then I remembered, again, I'm not giving any details away, characters, anything like that. I remembered in book 8, the storyline, or a storyline, the story, is that better? The book, or Diana, because she's everything. Diana takes us back to Cranesmere. I'm not going to say how, why, when, but it happens. It's the strongest, evidence that's not been made public, because no one's putting it on the, you know, this is not a news article, but it's the strongest, maybe not evidence. Well, it's still evidence. It doesn't mean I'm right about what it's for, but it's the strongest piece of information I have heard of from any source that suggests we will quite likely be getting a season 8, because if they're recceing for it, number one, that's suggestive potentially, right? For anything. Number two, they're doing a recce in a play in Kudus. Kudus was already used for Crainsmere. Crainsmere comes back in book 8. So anyway, that's a lot of information, and we are not promising. I'm not promising that it's going to happen. I just thought it was very interesting. So that's a long way of getting started in the chapter that we have not started. So as we open, as I said, September 1980, Bree and Roger are at Lallybroch. And I'm sure when I started book 7, I probably like screamed when I read, oh my God, and yeah, then, no, I won't. And Bree and Roger are reading Jamie and Claire's letters from the 18th century, or at least a letter, the first letter.
Dude, this is
exciting.
No, this is the moment where I realized we've been talking for 45 minutes and we didn't even really start the chapter.
That's what I just said. So they now know that they indeed, meaning Jamie and Claire, did indeed survive the fire. And they recognize from the look and the smell, they recognize that the paper that they had written on was paper Bree had made herself 200 years ago. Like, how awesome is that? The letter was dated 1231-1776. And they both say that as they read the letter, they can just hear Claire speaking as they read her letter. Now, these letters, more than any others in the stories, because we know we're going to get...
Are these your favorite letters?
I wouldn't say my favorite letters, but I would say these letters, more than any others in the series, any series of letters in the series, should really, I hope, be incorporated as much as possible into season 7, because they help set a time frame and they help make that connection between the two times.
So here's my question. Do you believe that it is ultimately necessary for this to be a Claire voiceover while Bree and Roger are reading a letter? Because we have to hear their voice. If they hear her voice,
well,
we hear her voice.
We don't have to hear their voice. Her voice. But I could, if they wanted to do it like that, they could show them, you know, reading the thing and like having an emotional reaction. And then if they wanted to say, oh my gosh, I can just hear Ma or Mama. And he's like, yeah, me too. And then they could go straight to the 18th century and then start, you know, take up the story with Claire, which is what Diana does.
It was really hard to listen to via Davina because I didn't hear the transition. And all of a sudden I was like, wait.
There's a lot of that in these two chapters. So yeah. These letters are heartbreaking and uplifting because they know that they're reading something that their parents or her parents, his in-laws, like they've been dead for almost 200 years. Like yes, you mourn them, but you know, they're dead.
They have been. But for them, it was like however long ago.
Almost 3 years.
You think it was 3 years?
I know it was almost 3 years. Because if you do the math from when they left, they came back in about 1977.
That's true. But 3 years dead feels a lot different than 200 years dead.
So they learn about Claire filling them in. They learn about Donner and how the hearse was burnt. The house was burned down. And they have a chat that it was, well, meaning Roger says this. They have a chat about how it was actually Bree's fault that the house burned down since Ian had used her
that
matches.
That was funny.
That was funny.
She was like, but no, doesn't that mean that it was really his fault? And he was like, no, still you.
Kate O writes, Roger has it right. Claire and Jamie are never alone or without home as long as they have each other. Yeah, that's what, that's one of the things that Claire had written in the letter. It was very, very pretty. And then Diana changes POVs. And now we're with Claire of writing. She is in the middle. When we go from
it was
them
super
reading
awkward.
It was.
I didn't even realize
I'm like, is she still, are they still reading? No, it's Claire. She's writing or she's narrating. We're in the, yeah, it was an awesome transition.
Was it? Because it was not awesome for me.
It was so seamless that it threw me. Yeah. So it's Claire's POV in the letter anyway. She's writing it. But then we like go and we're legit with Claire doing as she's doing, like it literally her actions that she's taking or describing or were being described in the letter, she's actually pausing. She's like, and I paused the letter. Da, da, da. I'm like, oh, damn. So now we're with Claire. Yeah, it's just really, yeah, it's just like, it's a little bit of a mind F right there. Claire is caring for a very old and ill Granny MacLeod, whose two grandsons had we're going to go join the war or join the army. And they had heard about this conjure woman who could, they obviously couldn't go off to war with their with their sick granny. So they brought her up to Claire and dropped her off. And so Claire is taking care of her, basically nursing her as she until she dies.
Nursing her? No, it's hospice. They brought her there for hospice.
Yeah, they're a hospice nurses. They still nurse. Okay,
you're
she's
not
doctoring.
Wrong. I'm just saying I don't believe Claire ever intended to be a hospice nurse.
Not formally, no. She's a doctor, but she cares for people who are dying all the time.
Right, but as a surgeon, I believe that surgeons would be very bored with hospice care.
Oh, maybe, but she still feels that responsibility.
I mean, clearly.
So she's caring for the old ill granny, and she'd learned from Ian that someone had tried to kill the white sow. And this line cracks me up. Quote, Amy Higgins crossed herself at the mention of the sow. Likely 'twas a bear, she said. Nothing else would dare.
Oh, I hate it. I hate everything about that statement.
Stop.
She is not allowed to ever say those words.
Agreed.
And I hate it now more after reading the most recent book. Dang it.
Kate O writes, the immortal white sow, I do miss her in the show, as any time she's mentioned tends to offer some lightheartedness and humor. But they have so much to get through, and she doesn't push the story forward, so I'll go on enjoying her in the book. Same. After some noise at the door, Jamie and Ian go out on patrol together. And now we switch to third person, because we're following Jamie and Ian. Ian tells Jamie that there's a pig outside that had been killed and butchered with an axe. So they agree, yeah, it was Arch who had, you know, killed this pig and left it out. It was very sloppily. They thought that the bugs were gone. But now Jamie thinks maybe he's back for one of two. If he's back, he's back for one of two reasons. One, to do Jamie harm, or to get all of the gold.
Why not both?
They didn't know, meaning the bugs. They didn't know. Sorry, Jamie and everybody else had no idea where the bugs had hidden the gold. And then, as they're thinking this or saying this, they see the white sow emerge from beneath the remains of the big house. And that is when Jamie realizes that Arch, or the bugs, had hidden the gold beneath the big house, where the white sow resided. Pff, I think of that. I didn't. Not until they told me.
Because honestly, now granted, my listening to it this time through, I can't adequately speak to what I remembered the first time I read it. But the second they mentioned a pig being killed in the woods and it looking like a bring like attention axe. Here, right? Yes. The minute they said that, I was like, oh, that jerk. He totally put all of his gold. He was hiding the gold in the white sow's thing. Like it just immediately clicked in this time through. And I wish I remembered if it immediately clicked in the last time through. What do you think? Do you think you remember?
I never even made the connection when I saw the white sow. I didn't know diddly until Jamie said, that's where they put it.
Okay, well then this time
I'm telling you.
This time through, did you remember it?
Summer, you and I have been hinting at the gold during our episode. I have not forgotten.
Okay, that was honestly my question, because I did not vividly remember that that's where they'd hidden it until
so the good thing is so you're telling me that I was pretty damn successful in all the talk we've had about the gold for the, you know, kind of talking at it sideways for all of the episodes we've discussed. In all my side references, you've never remembered that it was under the house.
Of course I didn't. And that's what you should 100% take away from this.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not talking about reading. I'm talking about talking about it. So if I did not, and I wasn't trying to, obviously, honestly, I was not trying to, but if all my talk about it did not clue you in, someone else who had already read, even though you had forgotten, did not clue you in any way that it was under the house, God bless America, because thankfully I didn't. That's good as far as I'm concerned.
I think, honestly, this is part of the larger arc of the story for me, is that it's such a good story that all of this minutia things that are coming back up for me in rereading at a later date, because I have not read this book since it came out.
They're thrilling all over again.
Right. I knew the things that you remember. So I absolutely remembered about the Frenchman's gold. I absolutely remembered the bugs interactions with it and dicking
around with the gold.
Exactly. I knew that they were a large part of Dickard. Why the Frenchman's gold was anywhere near the ridge. So I remembered all of that. But I did not specifically remember that it was under the house with the white sow, but it was 100% the right place to hide it. And it was like the second they mentioned making a killing one of the pigs, but it wasn't the white sow, and leaving it out, and knowing how bloodthirsty that lady was,
that lady.
she's gonna smell that carcass and need to go eat
which,
it. And
which they both saying, if it's admitted dead, could very well have been her baby too.
It was some sort of her offspring. It was yes, she likely was the ancestor of this. So the ancestors came.
The dead one.
Yeah. So just the point being that it was like, it was such a good story writing plot that it made sense the original time I read it. Like, it might have been surprising the first time. And it was only surprising the second time because I was like, oh, yeah, that's where I'd put it. But I haven't read this book as much as four. So trying to experience this read-along. And honestly, it should have started with book five, but I feel like it took me three or four read-throughs to get through Fiery Cross. And A Breath of Snow and Ashes was long. But
yes,
I'm really feeling it now, just how much happens in the course of a story. Like, how much happens that is not, that it's minutiae. Minutiae things happen that while they are important to the main storyline, they are not integral to the main storyline. If that makes sense. So we knew the bugs were related to the gold. I did not remember how the bugs were related to the gold in so far as where they had hidden the gold.
So as they watch, Jamie's just had the realization. As they watch, and the white sow has just come out from under the big house, the ruins of the big house, they see a dark figure emerging from the spring house, carrying something that looks like a sack. Then we're back with Claire's POV. Granny McLeod dies. Claire's trying to keep Rollo from freaking out over being locked in, because he's been freaking out and he does not like to be separated from Ian. Ian is out with Jamie, and so he's not been great. He's not been happy since Ian left. So she's trying to, you know, nurse or whatever, the dying lady. She's trying to keep Rollo from freaking out because he's going to wake up the family, the babies, and the Higginses.
Nobody wants to wake the babies up.
So she decides, she puts Rollo on a leash. She decides to move the body to the shed outside. And so she has Rollo with her, and he's like, I'm guessing, tied up. So he can't get out of the shed. As she's preparing the body to be enshrouded, she's cleaning the body. Rollo hears a noise and freaks the F out again, or still. And then we're back with the third person, Jamie and Ian. They split up. So they had just seen this figure that looks like it has a sack, right? And they split up and decide to capture the figure, whom they believe to be Archbug. So Jamie calls out his name. The figure stops. The figure raises a gun and shoots Jamie in the thigh, yeah. Like raises his inner thigh. And
I mean, it was a good shot.
Lifted the other hand with the second gun to take another shot. And Jamie realizes it was someone's right hand, which meant it could not be Arch.
Could not. No, and there was a whole diatribe again.
In this split second that he's realizing this, so after he's shot, Ian's like, no more of this dude. Ian shoots an arrow and hits the figure from the back. Rollo, by now, so after he had heard the noise, he's in the shed with Claire, she lets him out and goes running because now she's freaked out that, you know, and even if she didn't let him out right away, certainly with the gunshot, she would have run to make sure because she knows Jamie's out there. So she's going to arrive later than Rollo because he's got four legs and he's faster. So Rollo arrives and he's running past them. So like into the woods, basically, we have to believe. And we're told that there a rifle sounds is shot from the trees. So Rollo has either seen something, he has to have. Rollo has seen or suspects something, you know, senses something in the woods. He runs toward it, and then you hear the rifle. Jamie arrives, gets to the fallen figure, and as soon as he had realized it wasn't Mr. Bug, he knew who it was right away, and he was like, "Oh no! Oh no! 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 Oh no!" It was that. That's a hard that scene, and this is kind of something that I've said in one of our season six episode discussions. In the books, only the books here, it is an awful scene. It is shocking, awful, sad. All of this stuff. Even if you don't like the bugs because of what they did, because of the gold and the lying and all that, it's an awful scene that she dies for this. Really, there was no need to die, right? She didn't have to die. And her last words are, "I want Arch."
Yes, but I feel that this is probably the exact same reason why I can still hate Malva, knowing her situation, is that choices were made.
Yes.
And you knew the choices you were making when you made them. So, and Malva was young, but she was still cognizant. She knew what she was doing. We knew she was intelligent. And it's the same thing I feel about the bugs.
Malva's situation was, you don't have to agree at all with her choices, but Malva's situation was desperation.
Sure, but this could be too. But it was you're going to call it desperation, but they were also trying to like, oh, wealthy landowner. Oh, this will save me from my dad and I can have money. It's all still money driven, because she could have claimed that anyone was the father of her kid.
The reason that she chose Jamie was, quote unquote, made sense. If she was not so close to Claire, people would have thought long and hard before believing her. But because she was so close to Claire and was at the big house so often, it was much easier to believe because she had access and opportunity. Even though we know it didn't happen. People who were, you know, are not there 24/7 watching how much or what Malva does with Claire or around Claire, she had opportunity, at least as far as quote unquote strangers, you know, other residents were concerned. And I'm not arguing good or bad.
She had physical, provable time and reason to claim at least three other men on the hill, on the ridge.
Yes, and those men were not rich and didn't have land.
That's what I'm saying, which means that it's ultimately not about the other things. It's ultimately about money.
Yes, but I think if it were solely Malva, it wouldn't have been that, because I don't believe she had wanted to get pregnant. And once she could no longer hide it, she absolutely was maybe not whipped for it, but I know she and her dad and her brother had discussions. So one of the things that we're absolutely going to lose, and again, anyone and every, you all can disagree, but one of the opportunities I would argue that we have absolutely lost, whether you felt sad for, and again, I'm not saying you agree with them, but you can be moved by someone's death, even if you don't like the actions that took and the death came about because of their actions, right? You can still mourn the fact that someone had to die or someone died because of whatever reasons. It is sad that Mrs. Bug died. Period, full stop. It is in the books. It's sad. I will argue, if they keep that, which I think they kind of have to, or I hope they do, put it that way. If they keep that in season 7, I don't give one rat's ass testicle that we lose.
Why
her.
Does an ass have a testicle on it?
I don't know. It just came out. So I don't give a rat's patoot if we lose Mrs.
Or his
Bug.
Ass testicle.
If we lose Mrs. Bug. Because Stars has not endeared her to us.
They've made her a busybody bitch.
100%.
She might as well be a Fisher folk.
I'm not. I mean, I have, and I guess I kind of am now, but that is the kind of thing. And in the big scope of things, is it okay to lose? Absolutely. Actually, it might make it. Well, no, I think it makes it okay. For a TV series, it's probably easier if you may. I'm not dumping on anyone, I promise.
I'll be the judge of that.
To me, if things are complex, it takes intelligence to develop storylines that cause you to have complex emotion. Things that you read, storylines you read, it takes a crafty writer. It takes someone with, I mean, I say intelligence, maybe that's not the word, but it takes some kind of talent, some kind of planning to be able to write something that even though you don't love the person who dies, you can absolutely, even if it's not for her own sake, I think I mourned in the books more for Mrs. Bug, or I mourned more for her death because of Ian's suffering, because of Jamie's sadness, because of Claire's sadness. Talking about the chickens, no one else is going to be so nice to these chickens. No one's going to know their names. That made me sad.
No, do you know what made me sad? It made me pissed off, not sad. It made me pissed off at Arch Bug for not doing his own reconnaissance and him thinking that he could cover her better. That he sent her in there. I don't feel bad for anybody, but I mean, I feel bad that she's dead, but it's Archbug's fault, and I will not change that. And you can fight me on it and disagree with me all you want. But the reason Mrs. Bug is dead is Archbug, 100%.
And now a word from our sponsor. Did you know that Gerber Life Guaranteed Life Insurance provides valuable whole life insurance protection to help cover your final expenses? It's true, and it can help with expenses such as medical bills, burial costs, and unpaid debts. It helps protect your family from the financial burden of your final expenses. If you're between 50 and 80 years old, or 50 and 75 in New York, your coverage is guaranteed with this policy, regardless of your health history. There are no medical exams to complete or lengthy health questionnaires to fill out. Simply visit GerberLifeFamily.com. And premiums don't increase over time. The amount you pay when the coverage begins is the same amount you'll pay throughout the duration of your policy. Just answer four easy questions to get your free personalized quote instantly by visiting GerberLifeFamily.com. See website for terms and restrictions.
What I'm trying to say is it takes some kind of talent, whatever level, whatever, you know, whatever, to come up with a scenario where there's a character who, you know, she's always been a busybody, but she was never an evil busybody. In the book, there's the opportunity to have this complex, maybe fighting emotions. You're like, damn it, she caused this, or Archbug caused that. And yet I'm still sad because all these other characters are sad and I do miss her. And she talks about the chickens and I lost it, right? So there's that. So Stars has made the choice to not ingratiate the bugs to us at all. And it's okay. It's a choice. That's fine, right? I'm not going to bitch about that too much more. So they made a choice. Well, let's say we do get her death. Let's say nothing about her death changes. They hide the gold the same place. Let's say it comes across, or they do it like scene by scene, identical to the books, to the book. Will the viewer, so not us, because we'll know if you haven't read the book, would the non-book reading viewer be shocked? Absolutely. But
I think they're
not going to care.
No, they won't.
Because they didn't care for her.
No, and they didn't make you care for her. And they also painted her with just the shadows in the last season.
Yes. And because we never got anyone else's positive view of her, really, I don't even think we're going to get the sympathetic viewpoint of her like we got in the books. Like I said, the complex kind of the feelings that are kind of at war, right? They're, mm-hmm. You know, you're like, I hate her, or she brought this on herself, and she and Archbug deserve this or whatever. And yet you're like, damn it. Look what you did, Merdina. Not only are you dead, but you're bringing these people who loved you. Your death brought them pain. No one is going to have pain in the series except Arch.
I know. No, they won't. They won't. And here's what I will say on that topic. I believe that with the medium itself, it's harder to have the amount of nuance needed.
Oh, 100%.
I agree. To allow that to happen. I feel like they are telegraphing hardcore that they have a different goal that is not perhaps in line with the rest of the Ridge. That's how they've set them out. They've made them a little bit other inside of their own house. Mm-hmm. It has made them like the grumpy, racist grandparents in this family reunion. So they are not setting them up for the deep nuance of they cared for everybody. Because even while Mrs. Bug was caring for people, she was also busybodying. She was also being a kind of a snot about it, and then hiding gold and doing all these other things. So it's like, I don't believe they are able to accurately capture the nuance of Mrs. Bug the way that they've written her so far in the series.
Yeah. And part of that, or a big hint about toward that, if we weren't already catching their drift by not making us care for her at all, by having Marshley be the one to kill Lionel.
You know what, though? I'm just going to say this, and I'm going to kind of try not talk on this anymore because this is totally off subject. This just makes me think of the TV show Lost, which I loved. I love, love, loved it. But it was guaranteed if there was a character who nobody liked, who got a character-centric episode about themselves, that made you look like you were maybe a good person, like the stripper with the heart of gold or the hitman who, you know, loves kittens, whatever the storyline has to be, they would create that in the last episode. So for instance, I feel like her name was Claire in the show too. God, why are there so many people named Claire? I don't remember. Whatever Maggie Grace's character's name was. Maggie Grace's character. So she was that rich Ian Somerhalder's character's sister, like stepsister. Like, and there was this horrible thing. She was just a bitch the whole time. And then in this last episode, they gave you the arc of why she was a freaking bitch. And it was because of trauma. And you finally were like, I care about this person now. And then they're like, no, we're going to kill him. So yeah, there's a part of me that feels like they might try to do a Lost twist and make us try kind of care about Mrs. Bug before they kill her or before Ian kills her.
By not ingratiating us to the bugs, or the bugs to us to the bugs,
it's easier to let them go.
By us not, well, yes, but if they actually do the storyline, I want to say right, but if they do the storyline in some fashion from book 7, which we're not at yet, so we can't say yet, but Archbug is throughout a good chunk of book 7, let's put it that way. So one of the benefits of the viewers not caring about the bugs or even hating the bugs, one of the benefits of that is when it comes time for, if they do it, comes time to use Bug in the role that Diana has him in book 7, he not only characters, the viewers will have absolutely no problem. It'll be feeding into their plans. That's the end of chapter 2. And Kate O had one thing to say. She writes, "The death of Mardina Bug always brought a tear to my eye. She was a busybody, but was just loyal to her husband. I don't believe she ever meant the Frasers harm, really. She just loved and adored her husband to a fault. Jamie never intended on hurting either of them. He just wanted them gone, not dead."
He totally didn't. And you could tell by just the dialogue in that scene when they realized as soon as the arrow hit it that it was not a man. And he was just like, oh, God, no.
Not a man. He's not a very good man. Sorry.
No. And then we move on to the, which is going to come next. In the next chapter, we're going to talk about where we're hearing Ian's plight of whatever about this whole thing. And it's just like this for me, this felt like vindication for Mardina Bug. That Diana was like, I want everyone to know she was not the ultimate bad dude in this. She was just, you know, here's all these great things about her. Like, she got, if this was Lost, she would have gotten at least 3 episodes before they killed her, when they started making her good. Like, they would ingratiate people to liking her before they killed her. This chapter unlocked a brand new nightmare in my dreamscape.
What, chapter 2?
And that is of, yes, chapter 2, when she was sorting with the body of Granny whoever, and she was like talking about her nether regions being withered, and I was like, that was a nightmare that I never thought I had to worry about.
No, she said they weren't withered.
That's even worse, because that implies that most times they were withered
or many times they're withered. Yeah, okay.
That's
so
what I'm saying. It was like,
take us to the next chapter.
It created a visual that I don't think will leave me soon enough so that I texted you while I was listening, as opposed to waiting until we talked about it. Anyway, so yes, we are moving on to chapter 3 of An Echo in the Bone, entitled Life for a Life.
Claire gets Jamie, again, an injured Jamie, shot in the inner thigh, I think, to the pantry. Yes, this is the same outdoor shed with the dead granny, with the non-withered private regions.
Blah, 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 blah. Ginger, shame on you.
You,
nightmare.
Nightmare
fodder.
I just told you it was
a new nightmare, and you keep talking about it.
I don't keep talking about it. I mentioned it once.
It's been twice.
They took Mrs. Bug there too. So she sees to Jamie's wounds. Jamie's now getting after himself, thinking, why was it so important for me to keep this gold or to not have them allow them to take it? It could have saved her life. And he asks, is there anything you can do for Ian, who is absolutely devastated.
No, of course he is. I mean, she was like he says coming up, I'm sure you'll mention it, she was like a granny. Like, and for somebody who's been so far away from his own mother and family, and he's never had an actual granny. Because we never hear anything about older Ian's family being a part of their lives. And it's just Jenny. So he only really has the experience of having uncles, aunts, and a mom. So having this other tiered, that's the wrong word, having this other adult female in his life who kind of fills in that position that no one else has ever filled before. And then he accidentally just killed her? That's got to be like, I mean, you know he already misses his mom. He's missing his wife and everything else that's happening. And the idea of accidentally shooting this person who he loves is devastating.
Absolutely. So Jamie asks Claire, is there anything you can do for Ian? He's just like, he is beyond devastated. He's just so devastated. So she sends Jamie back to the house and she goes out to find Ian.
Oof, but didn't she say the whole time she was hoping she didn't find somebody else?
No, she didn't want to find his body. She was,
yeah, that's
she didn't
what I'm
want
saying.
To find Ian's body.
Oh, okay. Because there was a whole section where she was like, I don't want to find so-and-so's body. And I couldn't remember whose body it was.
I think she said him.
Yeah. Okay. I saw him, so I didn't know who him was. I thought it was going to be
I think she was afraid he might kill himself. That's why.
Oh, okay.
She finds him in the barn. That was the barn near the big house. In the dark with all the other animals there. And she sits and talks with him. And Ian knows, he knows logically it wasn't his fault. But he doesn't know, he says he doesn't know how he can go on living.
Logically, it was his fault. Was he trying to kill her? No. Was he trying to kill someone? Yes. So when he shot, he was going to kill someone. He did not intend to kill her. However, the intention was for death the whole time. So that is like, I agree with you. That was not what he intended, but the end result was kind of the same. It was just the wrong person.
So Claire and Ian both cry and they hold each other. And Ian asks if she'll say the soul leading prayer with him. And it's a prayer said apparently for unplanned death or wrongful death. Maybe I think it's wrongful death. Anyway,
untimely. Not right time. I don't know.
I think untimely is included in unright. Am I making up a word? Unright. Wrongful. Unrightful. Ginger.
Unrightful.
So they make together. They make their way back to the cabin, and she's wondering, what did the Mohawk do in such a case? And then she realizes, I actually do know what they do in this case, and so does Ian, because he had done it.
Hey, I have a question for you. So I'm thinking about how this chapter's structured and everything else. And Ian is thinking about what he's thinking about. And Claire's thinking about what she's thinking about. But I really feel like this Merdina bug, I think Diana felt so bad about turning her character into a bad person that she gave her like a chapter and a half send off to be like, no, but she's really cool. We loved her. We don't really blame her. She was good amongst the rest of us. She loved the chickens. She gave them all names, even though she also killed them and fed them to us. So, I mean, it just felt.
Yeah, not a lot of other people, especially not Jamie or Claire's
in Diana's books, get this kind of eulogy.
Or kind of send off. Yeah. Or memory.
Yeah. We're not only the person who killed them feels awful about it. Like everyone feels awful about it.
Yeah, that's true.
Rest in peace, Merdina Bug. And that was chapter 3. Join us next time when we will be when we will be continuing our An Echo in the Bone read-along with chapter 4 entitled Not Yet a While and chapter 5 entitled Morality for Time Travelers.
Again, a very special thanks to co-producer Lisa S. To find more about how you can support us on Patreon and decide to become a co-producer or not, you don't have to be a co-producer, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you would like to join us to continue the conversation, you can find us at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you're interested in some Outlander Pod branded merch, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
And if you haven't joined our text community, why not? Pourquoi pas? Warum nicht? It's free. Text hello to 916-659-5112. And thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.